right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today's February 25th, 2026. And our top story this morning, it's just wonderful to have it back in the headlines. It's been a couple of weeks, a rough couple of weeks. My favorite of the shiny silver is back above $90 and, more importantly, approaching a key technical level from earlier this month. And it's very important when we get to that level, what happens. I'm not celebrating it just yet, but I'm encouraged, especially because gold, its yellow cousin, has already broken that key technical level. Gold has been helped by the geopolitical risk associated with what's going on with the military buildup in Iran, and of course, the nothing but uncertainty around tariffs, the certain uncertainty, if you will, around tariffs has helped gold had a good couple of days here. The gold to silver ratio is falling again. The one thing that gives me pause is that volatility. It never really went away. These $5 to $10 intraday swings, we never really got more than a couple days of a break from that. So anytime markets are crazy volatile like that, showing signs of illiquidity, I'm always a little skeptical of the price action. But either way, I like this shiny. We're going to take a look at the charts here and see what that's telling us about these key levels and what might be coming. Now, the other big story going on this morning, NVIDIA earnings after the bell, arguably the single most important moment in all of earnings season because NVIDIA pretty much is the market. All right, I'm not going to talk about will they beat. The market expects them to beat expectations and raise guidance. And when you're expected to beat expectations, it means if you're beating expectations, you're really only meeting expectations because your expectations suck, which means you need better expectations. Let's stop expecting that to change. But the key point here is how will the market react to this? The last three earnings calls in a row, the market really didn't buy NVIDIA's bullshit. And I do mean BS. You know, Jensen's going to get up there, as Gamers Nexus put it, dressed like a dead alligator dipped in crude oil. And he's going to talk about how, oh, yeah, millions and billions of this. And, oh, the demand is insane. And there's just not enough compute. We're so constrained, right? Okay, yeah, we've heard all this before. Will the market care? For 9 months, give or take, the market has not cared. And we've got a couple of stories going on about NVIDIA this morning that are very interesting. We've got a story that says zero is the number of H200 GPUs that NVIDIA has sold to China since the government, as part of the trade deal, that's now been effectively nixed because of the whole tariff ruling thing. But as part of the trade deal, we said, okay, you can sell H200s to China as long as you apply for a license and pay a certain percentage to the government. Zero is the number of H200s that have been sold under that agreement. China didn't buy any of them, even though NVIDIA said they had billions of dollars in inventory last quarter. That's kind of interesting. Will we see big inventory growth in their earnings? And of course, in their earnings, watch that growth in accounts receivable. I've noticed for several quarters now, accounts receivable has been growing faster than revenue. That's kind of a red flag there. Also keep in mind or keep an eye out for growth in their sales to Singapore, because maybe the reason why NVIDIA didn't sell any H200s to China is because we got this story in Reuters that says DeepSeek has been trained on Blackwell GPUs. And you might be saying, hang on a second, nobody. I thought it was illegal for China to buy Blackwell GPUs. And I would say you are correct. It is illegal for China to buy Blackwell GPUs. Well, then how did they get them? Oh, that's right. NVIDIA is a criminal enterprise. I'm sorry. I forgot that they've been selling out U.S. national security for years in turn, they just got to inflate those revenue numbers. You know, who cares if China develops military applications with our hardware and it results in the deaths of U.S. servicemen down the line and, you know, democracy in Taiwan fails because a overarching communist dictator invades the country? Who cares as long as we get those GPU sales to Singapore up? Am I right? Remember, that's a reminder, by the way. Jensen Huang is an American citizen of Taiwanese descent. In other words, an effing traitor. Strong words, but there's the numbers. How are they getting the GPUs? But don't worry. NVIDIA insists that all their customers follow the rules. By the way, insisting your customers follow the rules does not absolve you of your requirements. You cannot just play dumb. You are obligated to reject those sales if you have credible proof that they're going to China, which there obviously is in spades. Anyways, we got those earnings after the bell. Meanwhile, we've got CoreWeave. Just a week after Blue Owl told them, no, you can't have $4 billion because we can't find any suckers. I mean, investors to sell that debt to. Now CoreWeave is out trying to buy $8.5 billion worth of debt to pay for their data centers. This time they're using receivables for a deal that they've cut with Meta to try to get that financing. Again, a week after they couldn't borrow $4 billion, now they're going to try to borrow more than twice as much here. And they are using special purpose vehicles. How very Enron of you to try to finance these data centers. We've got CoreWeave earnings tomorrow after the bell. That's going to be interesting. Anthropic has lowered their safety standards due to worries about competition. This is interesting. We've been following this story for the last couple of days. Anthropic had been summoned to the Pentagon because certain of their safeguards, the Pentagon wanted them removed in order to have access to their classified systems. And, you know, there was this back and forth between the two companies. Yesterday, we had the story that XAI was being installed in some of these classified systems. So there's your competition that Anthropic is worried about. And now they're saying, okay, we're dropping our safety standards. And I would say if you drop your safety standards, the second you risk losing money, then you never really had any safety standards to begin with. It was just a thing that you said at meetings to sound good. Because the funny thing about standards, the funny thing about ethics, they're expensive. Yes, they are. I could be pumping shit coins to you day in and day out on my channel. I could be shilling these like rent your gold to us services, these people that offer me money day in and day out. But I think they're BS services and I don't think they're good for the people that they're advertising to. And so I don't pump that shit on my channel and it costs me a lot of money. That's how standards work. Apparently not for Anthropic. Apparently when you get to a certain level, you don't care about any of that. You just do whatever you have to do to get paid. All right, good luck, Anthropic. That's fine. We've got Russia and Iran are lowering the prices for crude oil as prices for Brent crude rise. We've got prices for Russian and Iranian crude is falling. We're seeing the spreads is widening there. That's an interesting story going on this morning. Lowe's earnings, no surprise there. We got a beat, but they guided light. That stock is down. The frozen housing market continues to plague the retail homeowner stores. UBS is warning about 15% defaults in private credit. That's interesting because just a month ago, they warned about 13% defaults in private credit. In other words, we're going up. It's getting worse. Okay, that's interesting. Now, why is UBS raising their target or their worst case scenario for defaults in private credit? They're saying because of the AI scare trade. And I'm so sick of hearing about the AI scare trade. I think it is fabricated nonsense. I think it's sell-side research that's being pumped in the financial press, and there's no evidence of it beyond certain stocks that are going down. As a matter of fact, Bank of America just did a survey yesterday, a survey of credit investors about what their biggest fears were in the markets, and that survey said nobody is really worried about AI disruption. As a matter of fact, 9 out of 10 people surveyed in the private credit space said they are not worried about AI disruption. Do you know what their biggest fear was? Give you a wild guess what their biggest fear was in the private credit space, an AI bubble. In other words, exactly what I've been saying for years. But you know what? The press is spinning this. No, the reason these credit stocks are going off isn't because AI has failed to deliver on the promises, isn't because of the accounting fraud and the bad debt that's piled up in the AI space. No, it's because AI is so awesome. And that's why these stocks are going down. Okay, good luck with that one. We've got Raystone has filed for bankruptcy. That is further fallout from the First Brands fraud. Raystone was a company that dealt with a lot of First Brands receivables. They were the investors who bought them, and well, they're left holding the bag when First Brands goes bankrupt. Another cockroach story there, Jamie Dimon. And we are watching in real time this morning as a private equity firm in Germany loots a decades-old company. You can see it happening in real time. We've seen this playbook before. It's how private equity loots companies and destroys them all while paying themselves handsomely. Stick around to the end of the show. And remember, this is the kind of garbage that is being dumped into your retirement plans as we speak. Guys, there's a lot going on this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. And don't forget, link down in the description, get your tickets to George Noble's Best Stock Ideas Conference on March 11th at which yours truly will be presenting. Here on the screen is just a couple of the people who will be presenting there, not to mention this adorable yet ruggedly handsome and somehow incredibly modest name in the lower right-hand corner there. But right now, the S&P 500 is up 32 points or 0.47% higher ahead of the opening bell. The Dow is up 250 points, about a half a percent higher as well. And the NASDAQ is higher by 136 points, 0.55% higher ahead of the open. Stocks are up across the board here. Again, everybody is waiting on those NVIDIA earnings. The U.S. dollar is somewhat flat this morning. It's been bouncing around a little bit, 97.94 for the DXY. That is higher by 4 basis points. Looking over at the bond market, again, kind of a muted move. We've got yields are a little bit higher here. 30-year Treasury, 4.704%, up by 1.5% this morning. The 10-year yield is at 4.057. That is up by almost 2.5 points. The 2 years at 3.477%, up by 2 points and change. And the 1 month is down by almost a point at 3.680. Looking over at Bitcoin, we are looking better than we were yesterday. We went as low as just under 63,000 yesterday. We went to, I think, 62.5. And here we are at 66.4. So Bitcoin catching a bounce, although still trending down somewhat here. We did have a story about a bank in the United Arab Emirates. Emirates ABD, I think was the name of the bank, that they are considering, pondering, starting a position up to 1% of the bank's holdings in Bitcoin. Possibly that's leading to a bit of buying this morning. Also, we had this one with Circle's earnings. Circle is the issuer of the USDC stablecoin. Circle shares surge after profit and revenue tops estimates. Circle Internet Group's profit and revenue increased more than estimated, while the amount of its USDC stablecoin in circulation jumped 72% to $75.3 billion in the fourth quarter. Revenue rose 77% to $770 million. That's all the yield that their stablecoin holders should be getting in treasury bills. Instead, Circle is collecting it. That's up 77% from the year earlier period. Analysts surveyed had expected $747 million. Net income was $133 million, or 43 cents a share. Let's see. The company shares rose about 12% in pre-market trading. While revenue and the amount of the USDC stablecoin in circulation increased from the year earlier period, the company said Wednesday that its reserve return rate was 3.8%, mirroring almost exactly the yield on a one-month treasury bill. Circle earns most of its profit from interest paid on U.S. government securities that it holds in reserves to back its stablecoin. Now, this is kind of interesting. I'm generally not a fan of stablecoins, but I can't help but notice here. First of all, the stock is ripping. It's up 19% ahead of the opening bell, even though it's had a bad year. It's down about 11%. It's still going to be down quite a bit, even after the bump this morning, after the opening bell, down 11% over the last 12 months or so. But I would point out, this is actually faring a hell of a lot better than pretty much everybody else in the crypto space. Remember, Bitcoin is down about 50% from its highs of just a few months ago. So all things considered, Circle is doing pretty well here. Again, down year over year, but a pretty good quarter. All right, but this is the big news this morning, the commodity space. Gold is having another good morning, $5,184, up 41.5 bucks here, 0.8% higher from gold. April COMEX gold futures, $5,203, almost 5204, up 28 bucks or 0.54% higher. Spot silver back above 90 bucks, $90.77, up by $3.60 or 4.1% higher. Overnight, we hit a high of 91.25. Watch that level. We'll look at the chart in just a second here. March COMEX silver futures at $90.70, up by $3.20 or 3.65% higher. I like the shiny. Copper's up by 0.5%. Platinum is up big here, 5.7, almost 5.8% higher for platinum. Palladium is up by 1.5%. Crude oil is up a tick as well, 20 cents higher or 0.3% at $65.83 for April WTI futures. But let's look at that silver chart. Now, here is what I am looking at for silver. All right, this is daily candles. Let's zoom in just a little bit here. All right, here was that brutal sell-off. All right, we all remember the worst day in silver history. We were all kind of expecting it. We just didn't know when it was going to get there. The level I'm watching here is that dead cat bounce. from February 4th when we went as high as $92.19 on February 4th. That was that dead cat bounce. And then, of course, the volatility came right back afterwards. Now, we have been grinding higher. Overnight, we hit that intraday high of about 91 and a quarter, just below that level, only about a dollar short. So, you know, it's that level, we'll call it 92 even. That is the level I'm watching. Are we going to, you know, are we going to, oh, wow, that was just a terrible line. Are we going to come up to this level, bounce off it, and resume lower? Or are we going to break above it, come back and retest, and then resume higher? I don't know. It's 50-50 here, guys. It's based on the technicals. But while we're looking at that level from February 4th in silver that you really want to watch, just above $92, let's take a look at the gold chart. And that's very encouraging here because when we look at the gold chart, all right, we're looking at the same thing. There's that brutal sell-off that we all saw coming. Now, here is your February 4th high for gold. That level was about 5,091. In other words, about 100 bucks ago. Gold has already broken above that level, came back down, retested it, and now we're heading higher here. So looking at the gold chart, very encouraging about the silver chart. All right. And look, gold has been helped by the tariff uncertainty. Gold has been helped by the military buildup in Iran. So I'm encouraged by what I see in the charts here. I see silver approaching a resistance level that gold has already broken. And while all of this is going on, we've also got the gold to silver ratio is once again resuming lower here. We had a big spike in the gold to silver ratio after this historic fall. Oh my God, the pop-ups are killing me this morning. Let's get rid of that squiggle there. Oh my goodness. What? Here, let's just refresh this here. There we go. Thank you. My goodness. All right. Yeah, we had this big drop and then, of course, a big spike in the gold to silver ratio. That was that big sell-off. On February 6th, the gold to silver ratio hit its high. We went back actually briefly into the 70s. Now, I have this red line here around 65. That's been kind of like a support resistance level over the last 20 years or so. We came back below that level. Now we're heading lower here. Again, the gold to silver ratio is actually a little encouraging because we came up and we kind of rejected this level twice, and now we're heading lower again. So guys, the charts look great for gold and silver here right now. Big question is when silver gets to 92 and change, where do we go from there? But I see good things here. I'm not like piling back into the trade or anything like that here. And again, the volatility still gives me pause. I don't trust these big moves because I think it's like meme coin and meme stock traders piling into silver. Those guys pile out as fast as they pile in, which is when you get those big brutal sell-offs. But right now, the charts are looking pretty good in my opinion. Looking over at NVIDIA this morning. These two stories combined are very telling about the way NVIDIA does business. NVIDIA has sold zero H200s to China, top U.S. export enforcer says. NVIDIA has yet to sell any of its H200 chips to China 2 months after President Trump's decision to allow shipments of the AI processors to the world's second largest economy, according to a U.S. official who helps enforce export controls. David Peters is the Assistant Secretary for Export Enforcement at the Commerce Department, and he told the House Foreign Affairs Committee on Tuesday that the U.S. was boosting efforts to crack down on smuggling of advanced semiconductors used in AI in response to a question from Democrat Representative Sidney Kemlager-Dove on how many H200s have been approved for sale to China. Peters said, my understanding is that so far, none. None. While Peters does not directly participate in the licensing process, his comments on H200s offer a rare window into the workings of the Commerce Department's Bureau of Industry and Security, or the BIS, which oversees required U.S. approvals for exports of sensitive technology. His testimony came as investors await NVIDIA's earnings release Wednesday, when the company may outline progress toward regaining access to the lucrative Chinese market. All right, regaining access to that lucrative Chinese market after selling no H200s. That's an interesting statement, Bloomberg. How do we rectify that with this article in Reuters just yesterday? Or I'm sorry, just too late yesterday. China's DeepSeek trained an AI model on NVIDIA's best chip despite U.S. bans. All right. Maybe the reason they didn't buy any H200s is because they don't need them because they are easily breaking the law in buying the Blackwell chips. Chinese AI startup DeepSeek's latest AI model, set to be released as soon as next week, was trained on NVIDIA's most advanced chip, the Blackwell, a senior Trump administration official said on Monday in what could represent a violation of U.S. export controls. What is this could represent a violation? All right. If a Chinese company is training them on Blackwells, they're not allowed to have, it's an export violation. All right. Did NVIDIA know? Did they not know? Are they playing dumb? You can debate that, but this is absolutely an export controls violation. Why all this wishy-washy statements? Oh, we got to protect our stock market bubble. The U.S. believes DeepSeek will remove the technical indicators that might reveal its use of an American AI chip, the official said, adding that the Blackwells are likely clustered at its data center in Inner Mongolia, an autonomous region in China. The person declined to say how the U.S. government received the information or how DeepSeek obtained the chips, but emphasized that U.S. policy is we're not shipping Blackwells to China. Well, that might be U.S. policy, but somebody forgot to tell NVIDIA, or at least forgot to slap them on the wrist when they did it anyway. NVIDIA stock right now is looking pretty good this morning, $194.57. It's up about 0.9% ahead of the opening bell. But look, guys, we have been pretty much at this level, plus or minus $5, or we'll say plus or minus $10, since the beginning of August. And here we are in February. For three quarters, we have gone nowhere. So we'll see what the market decides today. Do we care about NVIDIA's beat and raise, which they're sure to report? Or are we finally going to start punishing accounting fraud? Are we finally going to start punishing selling out U.S. national security? I don't know. This market just loves fraud. That's the one thing I can tell you. Case in point, CoreWeave. CoreWeave seeks $8.5 billion loan from banks backed by Meta deal. All right. It's just a few days after they were told they couldn't have $4 billion. Now they're asking for $8.5 billion. That's a bold strategy, Cotton. We'll see if it pays off for them. CoreWeave is looking to raise about $8.5 billion from banks, including Morgan Stanley and Mitsubishi, to help finance a build-out of cloud computing capacity for Meta platforms, according to people familiar with the matter. The proposed delayed draw term loan would be backed by a contract Meta signed last year to pay CoreWeave up to $14.2 billion for its services, said the people, asking not to be named. It's also supported by a separate agreement between the two reached earlier this year, valued at more than $5 billion, that hasn't been reported, they said. Why didn't they report it? Probably because they're trying to keep it off their balance sheet. While CoreWeave carries a speculative grade rating from major credit assessors, in other words, it's junk debt, Meta's blue chip profile is expected to support an investment grade rating on the loan, lowering its borrowing costs, the people added. Now, wait till you see the borrowing costs here. Where was it? Okay. Pricing on the new loan is being discussed at 2.25 percentage points over the secured overnight financing rate, or SOFR, which would translate into an interest rate of roughly 6% at current levels. All right. Junk debt to a company run by financial engineers with some of the shadiest history in the world, a garbage balance sheet that even Blue Owl is saying no to, and they're trying to borrow at 6%. Who in their right mind would lend money to CoreWeave for 6% interest right now? Good God. The company's delayed draw term loans, including the new one, fall into a type of lending called GPU finance, where typically a special purpose vehicle is used to raise the funds and own the chips. Okay, that Enron for 1,000, Alex. CoreWeave has previously included these loans on its balance sheet because the company guaranteed the debt, the people said. While this new loan did not need a parent guarantee due to the strength of Meta's contracts, CoreWeave is expected to still include it on its balance sheet for transparency, the people added. Okay, CoreWeave might be expected to do it, but are they gonna? Again, they never reported on this loan. We're just finding out about it now. Maybe that's because they don't expect to put it on their balance sheet. CoreWeave is rapidly evolving its complex debt capital structure as it seeks to finance its significant capital expenditure needs, S&P Global Ratings analyst wrote on December 10th. In other words, they need more and more money to burn, and so they're getting more and more creative in their accounting. And this is a company that's been awfully creative from the get-go with their accounting. CoreWeave stock is back above $100, $101, say $101, up about $2 or 2% higher ahead of the opening bell. CoreWeave reports earnings on Thursday. And we've got Anthropic drops their hallmark safety pledge in a race with AI peers. It's because Anthropic never really had any standards. If you set aside your standards the second they get expensive, then they were never really standards. They were just things you said to sound cool at meetings. Anthropic, which has pledged to make artificial intelligence guardrails a priority, has loosened its central safety policy, saying the move is necessary to keep pace in a rapidly changing field. The company in 2023 said in its responsible scaling policy that it would delay AI development that might be dangerous. In a Tuesday blog post, Anthropic said it was updating its rules to say it would no longer do so if it believes it lacks a significant lead over a competitor. What a chicken shit move. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to put it so bluntly, guys, but I mean, call it what it is. The updated policy, which was earlier reported by Time, coincides with a growing dispute with the U.S. Defense Department over Anthropic's insistence on guardrails for use of its Claude AI tool. The Pentagon on Tuesday threatened to invoke a Cold War-era law to compel Anthropic to allow the U.S. military to use the startup's technology if the company failed to comply with the government's terms by Friday. So they're like, yeah, okay, we'll just get rid of our safety standards. Can't let it cost us money. Can't have competition. All right, meanwhile, we've got some interesting things brewing in the oil market here. This one in Bloomberg this morning. Shout out to Mish who found this one. Russia and Iran are slashing prices to China as oil piles up at sea. Now, the oil piling up at sea, that's nothing new, but Russia and Iran cutting their prices. We've seen this ever since India stopped buying the Iranian crude and the Russian crude, mostly Russian crude, they stopped buying because they're buying from Venezuela now. Russian and Iranian oil producers are offering deepening discounts as they compete for the same limited group of Chinese buyers after India retreated from purchases. India's imports from Russia could drop by 40% from January levels to around 600,000 barrels a day, according to a scenario from Rystad Energy. Much of the displaced cargoes are now heading east, spurring a price war with Iranian suppliers that have long been favored by China's private refiners. Russia's Urals grade is selling at around $12 a barrel below the Brent crude price, according to traders familiar with such deals. That's compared with a $10 discount last month. So we're seeing that spread widen here. Iranian light is going for as much as $11 less than the global benchmark, they said, asking not to be named. This widened from $8 to $9 in December. The independent Chinese refiners, known as teapots, have historically acted as the oil market's pressure valve, absorbing barrels shunned by others, but their capacity is finite, given that they only account for around a quarter of the country's processing capacity and are also subject to government-set import quotas. With China unable to fully soak up the displaced crude, unsold oil is piling up in Asian waters, and Russia and Iran are running out of options. The Kremlin has already been forced to curb output, depriving it of funds for its war in Ukraine. Iran, meanwhile, is trying to ship as much oil as it can as it girds itself for a potential attack by the U.S. So, look, we can see what happened in Venezuela and what is happening in Iran. It's affecting gold and it's affecting oil here. We've got the price for the Russian and Iranian crude is heading lower, even as Brent is heading higher. That spread is opening up. And right in the middle of that is India, who cut a deal with the U.S. just a few weeks ago to stop buying that Russian crude in order to get their tariffs lower. But those tariffs were just ruled unconstitutional by the Supreme Court. So will India continue not buying Russian crude? We don't know, because other tariffs are coming right behind that Supreme Court decision, because President Trump is now using Section 122 and Section 232 of two different laws to replace the IEEPA tariffs that were just struck down by the Supreme Court. Dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria. The only certain thing is uncertainty here. This story is very interesting. A lot of moving parts here. Meanwhile, we've got Lowe's earnings this morning, very similar to what we saw from Home Depot yesterday. Lowe's signals muted housing demand in weak full-year forecast. Lowe's forecast sales guidance for the full year that fell short of expectations, a sign the housing market will remain lackluster in the near term due to high borrowing costs and economic volatility. The company said it expects comparable sales to be flat to as much as 2% higher compared with the prior year, very similar to what Depot just reported. The midpoint of that range is lower than what Wall Street was expecting. So that guidance is viewed as a little bit weak here. There are some early green shoots for Lowe's and other housing-focused operators, which have reported soft sales in recent years. U.S. mortgage rates have been declining in recent months, while median home prices are staying relatively flat. These could serve as catalysts for reinvigorating the housing market. Emphasis could. So far, they haven't. But there has yet to be any notable change in demand. Americans remain concerned about inflation, job losses, and other macroeconomic factors. They're spending on necessities and new items that they find valuable, but are deferring large discretionary projects. While homeowners represent one of the healthier consumer cohorts, many are putting off home improvement projects with the hope of moving in the coming years when rates fall. Now, look, rates have been falling pretty much all year. We've seen mortgage rates have come down pretty substantially, but it is not moving the needle in the housing market. Home sales remain frozen near lows. Even though interest rates keep going lower, the number of transactions is not going up. Why? My guess is there is a shortage of qualified buyers because of inflation, because of a frozen job market. And well, that is weighing on Lowe's this morning. Even though their earnings beat, that weak guidance is front and center in investors' thoughts here. $270 for Lowe's stock, down about $8 or 2.9% lower ahead of the opening bell. All right, now we got a couple stories about private credit and private equity here. And again, guys, I know we tend to end the show with this subject, but I think it's very, very important because look, I've been singing this song for months. Months before anybody even heard the name Blue Owl, we've been warning about this. And now we've got this one from UBS. Private credit fears deepen with UBS warning of 15% defaults. The warning is right. The reason they're offering is horse puggy, in my opinion. A few weeks ago, analysts at UBS laid out a worst-case scenario for defaults in the private credit sector. Their outlook just became more grim. Strategists, including Matthew Misch, say private credit could see default rates surge as high as 15%. That is 2 percentage points more than the firm forecast less than a month ago, if artificial intelligence triggers an aggressive disruption among corporate borrowers. What is new? A clearer catalyst, rapid, severe AI disruption, according to the UBS strategists on Tuesday. All right, so I think they're right. I think private credit is a bigger risk than it was a month ago, but UBS is doing this Citrini CNBC line that, oh, the reason all these stocks are selling off is because AI is so good. Everybody's worried about how awesome AI is. Well, let's test that theory, shall we? Because we got this article just yesterday in Bloomberg from Bank of America. AI bubble becomes credit's biggest scare, BofA survey suggests. Not AI disruption, AI bubble. And this has been my biggest gripe with this stupid narrative of AI disruption is going from industry to industry, killing everybody right now. No, I think these stocks are selling off because the debt is going bad because of the AI bubble, not because of AI disruption. An AI bubble is the biggest concern of credit investors for the first time ever, according to a survey from Bank of America. Few worry about geopolitics or central bank policy error, BofA strategists, including Barnaby Martin, wrote in a note on Tuesday. Some 23% of surveys, investment grade respondents, saw the threat of an AI bubble as their top concern, up from 9% in BofA's previous survey in December. All right, that is important here. These are institutional credit investors. These are not retail guys. This isn't a Twitter poll. All right, this is Bank of America surveying institutional credit investors. And the number of them who are most worried about an AI bubble has more than doubled from a month ago. It's gone from 9% to 23%. Worries over potentially unsustainable surge in investment and valuations of AI companies overtook bubbles in credit as the top concern, according to the survey. Anxiety over trade tensions and a global recession had also been seen as the biggest perceived risk during 2025. Nope, now it is the AI bubble. Yet investors are more sanguine, as in they don't care, on the ultimate tech disruption ahead. Just 10% say that AI-driven corporate obsolescence is their big worry, the strategist wrote. So right there, you can see this is institutional credit investors. More than two times as many of them are worried about an AI bubble as they are worried about AI disruption. And I've been saying this all week, this AI scare trade doesn't smell right to me. I think the AI bubble is the bigger risk. I don't agree with the Citrini article. Oh, it's because AI has exceeded every expectation. Really? Because we were promised like new breakthroughs in quantum physics and instead we got AI slop. Okay, maybe it exceeded expectations or maybe it's a massive multi-trillion dollar disappointment. Institutional credit investors have already realized that. But the financial press is pushing this other narrative to give themselves time to get out before they leave retail traders holding the bag. Hey, that's just my thoughts. You guys think what you want. Meanwhile, we've got more private credit problems. Trade financier Raystone to liquidate after the First Brands blow up. We talked about Raystone not too long ago. Interesting thing here, the company and one of its affiliates filed Chapter 7 bankruptcy in New York, listing $3.7 million in assets and $1.9 million in liabilities. How are they bankrupt if they have almost twice as many assets as liabilities? That's interesting. The reason is the assets that they have are worthless. The collapse of the auto parts supplier rattled Wall Street firms that provided the company with billions of dollars in off-balance sheet financing. See also CoreWeave, see also Blue Owl, off-balance sheet financing. There it is, hidden debt. Federal prosecutors have accused First Brands founder Patrick James of fraud. James has denied wrongdoing and is contesting criminal charges. Well, of course he is, a criminal of the unique disposition that he is innocent. Raystone laid off half of its employees soon after First Brands filed for bankruptcy in September. The company told staff at the time that it relied on First Brands for more than 80% of its revenue. In a September court filing, Raystone said that one of its affiliates was owed more than $172 million in purchased receivables related to First Brands. And that right there, $172 million of receivables from First Brands, is why they're bankrupt, even though they're saying they have $3.7 million in assets and $1.9 million in liabilities. All right. Almost all of their assets are Raystone or First Brands receivables. So this company going bankrupt is not really a surprise here. And we've been talking about private credit. We can't leave out private equity. We got to talk about this one too, guys. This is how private equity destroys companies. You can see it happening in real time here. CVC-owned Syntagon hikes debt by 40% for a shareholder payout. And who are the shareholders? Well, it's CVC. All right, they're raising debt to pay themselves. Syntagon, a German packaging machine maker owned by CVC Capital Partners, a private equity firm, has boosted its debt pile in order to pay shareholders a dividend of more than 550 million euros. That's about $648 million after a sale process was put on ice, according to people familiar with the matter. All right, so they tried to sell the company. They couldn't. They couldn't get enough money. Instead, they're borrowing money to pay fake earnings to their shareholders for an asset that they can't sell at the advertised price. Private equity in a nutshell. As part of a strategy shift, Syntagon extended its existing institutional leverage loans by 4 years, extend and pretend, and they increased their size by 40% to 1.6 billion euros. The additional debt and cash from the firm's balance sheet were used to fund the shareholder payment, the people said. This private equity firm is looting this company, borrowing money, taking all the money that they borrow, leaving the company alone with the pile of debt, which they will probably not be able to service, and they'll eventually go bankrupt and lay off all their employees. This is the private equity playbook. Rinse, repeat. They are doing this. They did it to Joann's Fabrics. They did it to Red Lobster. They are even doing it to freaking hospitals all over the country. The outright sale process was halted because suitors, including the German equipment maker GEA Group, were reluctant to pay the asking price of more than 4 billion euros. Some of the people said CVC was also considering a Zurich IPO. Can't take the company public, can't sell the company because it's not worth what you advertise. So instead, just pile the company up with debt to pay yourself dividends, leaving a dead company in your wake. This is the locusts of private equity in real time, destroying a perfectly good company. Careful, guys. That's the stuff they're parking in your 401k. And I just want to say thank you very much to Nacho Man, who is first. Thank you so much, you preemptive melonhead, you Nacho Man. Appreciate the ongoing support of the channel, as well as from you, Travis, who is second. Okay. Do I hear a third? Well, we've got Steve. Thank you, Travis. By the way, guys, check out Real Estate Mindset, one of my favorite YouTube channels as well. Steve Wojtas is third. Thank you, Steve Wojtas, for supporting the channel. He says, belated congratulations to the U.S. women's and men's hockey teams for their gold medal wins. Love to see the USA patriotism, your little brother, Canada. Well, I appreciate the tremendous show of sportsmanship there, Steve Wojtas, who, you know, I was about to say something snarky about Canada, and then I realized this is a Canadian guy congratulating us on the gold. So, all right. I will don my tinfoil hat for the sole purpose of tipping my hat to you for that good show of sportsmanship. Thank you, Steve. I appreciate that very much. Congratulations to the hockey teams for winning the gold, as well as to Canada for the silver. Thanks again, Steve. Appreciate that. Yago. You gotta be kidding. All right, it took me a minute. You gotta be kidding me. He says he's been a member for 10 months. Thank you very much, sir. A fellow Italian, I'm guessing. He says, are you DCAing silver or waiting for stock correction? The last physical metal I bought was at 60. So I haven't bought anything since then. And then since we ran up, you know, as metals ran from 60 to 120 and change and then back down, I was slowly unloading some call options in SLV that I had bought. I haven't made any trades since I sold the last of my SLV call options. As far as dollar cost averaging into physical metal, again, it's been a month and a half since I bought any physical metal. I'll probably end up buying more here soon. I'm not like rushing to buy any or anything like that. And I'm not letting the price in the COMEX really inform that decision. I'm basing that more on, do I see a decent deal? What are premiums doing? The short and in some cases negative premiums that we had in the retail metal market were nice while they lasted. Now, you know, we've gone from $2-3 for Silver Eagles up to like $11 to $19 for Silver Eagles. You can still get constitutional silver for less than spot though. The 90% junk silver, you can still get that for a couple of dollars back a spot. If you go to findbullionprices.com and you search around there, there's a couple of websites that are still offering that. That is the best deal on physical metal, in my opinion. I don't think that's going to last. I am looking for an opportunity to probably do some levered trades again, though. If I see us break above that 92 level, retest it, and move higher, then that would tell me silver's probably headed higher here. I'm already fairly convinced that's going to happen anyway, just because gold has already broken that level. But that's something to keep an eye on. Thank you. You got to be kidding me, sir. Good question. Mr. BTB Company says, going to go public on the New York Stock Exchange, symbol BTB. All right. You're going to IPO your teabagging outfit? I'm picking up the snark there. Good luck, sir, with your IPO. This market will buy anything. So let me just throw it out there. Put AI in your name. All right. Blah, blah, teabag company, AI, and you'll get a couple more billion out of that IPO. All right. Kind of like how you used to just be able to say .com or say blockchain after whatever. All of a sudden you're an AI company. You'll make more money. Case in point, Taser. Taser's out this morning talking about how, oh yeah, we're an AI company now. Really? I thought you sell apologizers. All of a sudden, now they do AI. All right. Good luck with that. Just AI washing. Sure. Thank you, Mr. BTB, for supporting the channel, sir. Jolly Lollipop says, Mr. Special, do you follow this elderly, limey Clive Thompson? I've seen some of his work, but I don't follow it that closely. He stated that Friday is a key date wherein the Crimex will face delivery issues. I've seen some of Clive Thompson's work, and I generally like most of what I see from Clive. So, I mean, I won't comment too much specifically on him. But I will say this is a pretty tired and tried and false narrative, right? All of these, on this day, the COMEX will run out of silver, right? I have read this talking point in one shape, form, or another for 6 or 7 years straight now. It never happens. The COMEX doesn't run out of silver. When the COMEX moves silver, all they do is they change the label. All right. So if you've got people are standing for delivery of 100 million ounces of silver and there's only 105 million ounces of silver, that doesn't mean the COMEX is going to be down to just 5 million ounces. Come the next day, there's still going to be 105 million ounces in there. They're just going to change the name on it. All right. So they didn't run out of silver. The price might move higher because maybe those 100 million people or 100 million ounces aren't going to go right back up for sale. Maybe they're going to come out of registered into eligible or whatever. But this whole, like, the COMEX is going to be empty on this date thing, you can only bang that drum so many times before people stop listening to it, all right? Yes, there are liquidity issues in the metal space. I think the liquidity issues are better shown looking at the arbitrage between London and New York, and I would say ignore anything you hear about Shanghai, because Shanghai is not a real metal market. Shanghai is a 100% paper market, where you've got $5, $6, sometimes even $7 arbitrages on the same day for the same metal in the same city. If there was a real metal market there, you could buy metal in one, walk it across the street and make $7 an ounce, but that doesn't happen because it's not a real metal market. So I'm not too big on the whole, like, oh, eligible and registered, and by this day, we're going to be out of metal. I've heard that before. Thank you, Jolly Lollipop, for supporting the channel, sir. Nacho Man Randy Savage says 20 new baby melons. Thank you again, Nacho, for supporting the channel, sir. Welcome to the Melon Heads, you baby melons. Don't forget to use that free super chat you get every month, and I will read and respond to your questions live on the air. And be sure and say thank you to Nacho. Thanks, Nacho. Appreciate that, sir. M&J says, happy birthday to Hunt and Cover. Well, happy birthday, Mr. Hunt. She says, hope you have a wonderful day. And thanks for being a longtime member. Thank you very much. Happy Melonhead birthday to Hunt and Cover. Appreciate that, M&J. SWFL Box says, why did Swiss dump gold? This is news to me that the Swiss dumped gold. So I haven't actually heard that the Swiss have dumped gold. But if I might posit a guess, there are a lot of refineries in Switzerland. So gold is typically one of Switzerland's exports anyway. That doesn't necessarily mean they're dumping gold as if I think the price is high enough, I'm getting out. They export quite a bit. I remember first quarter of last year when the U.S. GDP went deeply negative. It was because we imported a lot of gold. A lot of people bought gold into the country fearing tariffs. And a lot of that gold came from Switzerland. That wasn't necessarily the Swiss dumping. When you're a country that refines a lot of gold, gold is going to be one of your exports every month anyway. So unless there's another story about like the Swiss central bank has dramatically dropped their gold holdings, which I'm not aware that story has been out there. That's what I would take on that. And hold on. AI guy news. Okay. Something just hit. Okay. The narrative is that Swiss banks are selling gold to buy silver. Again, I haven't seen anything to that effect, so I can't comment on that one way or another. But thank you very much, SWFL. Thank you, Hunt and Cover, as well. Happy birthday, sir. He says, Jack, you mentioned March 11th. I said my birthday. People familiar with the matter ran with today. Oh, so your birthday is the same day as George Noble's conference that yours truly will be presenting at. So that's why we're the birthday thing. Well, let's just say, well, if it's belated, what's the opposite of belated? Prelated. I don't know if that's a word or not, but we just made it a word. Happy prelated birthday, Hunt and Cover. Thank you for the good vibe, sir. And for the support of the channel, I appreciate that either way. And thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melon Heads this morning. Appreciate that. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button. Check out that link down below to George Noble's Best Stock Ideas Summit Conference, where I'll be presenting on March 11th. And get your tickets now if you can. Thank you very much for all the super chats and the support of the channel, as well as you magnanimous melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links are also down below to those. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.